Hello all, welcome to the God Cetabos podcast. This is Patrick Barney. I'm the editor of Kai Dracona's books. The God Cetabos podcast is a content channel of Kai Dracona's books. We're just trying to spread the word about the press and, you know, all the interesting content that we're publishing. As a statement against commodification, all of our books are free. So you can go to our website, kaidraconis.org, kaidraconis.org, to, you know, look at the books we've published, and all you have to do is send me an email with your name and your email address and your snail mail address, and I will ship whichever book you're interested in reading out to you for free. So today we're in for what I hope is an extremely special episode of the God Cetabos. I am on the line with Jennifer Legere, who is the author of a book of poetry, or a poetry collection, called Trumped Up Election. Now, this was Kai Dracona's most recent publication. It came out back in April. So we are, you know, I'm sitting down with Jennifer to chat about, you know, her reasons for writing the book, and whatever else we get into. So I'm really excited. I'm really happy to talk to Jennifer. We've exchanged emails. We've, you know, I've read her work. So I'm really, really excited to actually get to speak with her. So how are you, Jennifer?
Oh, I'm delighted that you invited me to do this, and I'm thrilled about the book. It seems ever so much timely at this point, where it seems like everything is flying apart.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, for me, this is a rerun. I did this during the 70s with Watergate. So It's just like John Oliver said, this is stupid Watergate.
All right. I remember, you know, I wasn't alive during the 70s, but I remember living through 8 years of George W. Bush, thinking that this was just about the worst thing that I'd ever seen. And here I am just, you know, one president later, thinking that this is even, you know, this is much worse. Maybe not much worse, but it's pretty horrible.
Well, I lived through John Mitchell, Ed Meese, and that whole crew. Right. And at that point, I remember being baffled that they thought the American public was that stupid that they would put up with it. And this crew's even more obnoxious.
Right.
I mean, even more over the top.
Oh, man, absolutely. Just the brazenness of the Trump administration. It's really mind-boggling. How openly racist, misogynist, and all of these things that the Trump administration is. It's really, really frustrating.
Well, and I live in California, and he has a special vendetta going against us. He just killed several billion dollars that had been promised to us for high-speed rail, and also is withholding funds, emergency funds, after all our wildfires last year, and trying to shift that to his goddamn wall.
Oh my goodness. I don't know what to say other than that just makes me so mad. I mean, when we could be putting our budget to good use, and yet we've got this call for a wall, which, I mean, there's already a wall along some portion of the border, and it's not doing anything to stop, you know, drugs, which from what I understand comes through legally anyway. You know, the drug dealers smuggle it through legal channels. So,
The same thing, the flow of immigrants. The big flow of immigrants isn't coming over the border. They're people overstaying their visas.
Right.
Yeah, so how a wall's going to help that? How?
I have no idea. I have no idea. So, Jennifer, before we specifically talk about Trumped Up Election, I'd love if you would read you know, we talked about you picking out three or four poems. I would love it if you would read those for our listeners.
I will do so. The progression of the poems in the book itself start during the primaries, but I'm going to leap in a little bit later and try not. I tried to pick some out so I wouldn't be completely redundant, because it's kind of the same story over and over again.
Right.
But I tried to pick out a few that really spoke to me. First one's called No Reason to Laugh. Just in time for an investigation of collusion with Russia, America's idiot-in-chief returns to home shores from his big boy overseas trip. While a polarized committee issues swaths of subpoenas, he wants to return seized embassies. Disrespected, demoted, dismissed intel employees line up to vent. Administrative surrogates offer outrageous excuses, which their bloated orange leader flatly denies. Political uproar ensues. Leaks multiply. Whistleblowers face persecution. The GOP spins irrefutable facts. Presidential tweets spew, contradict White House lawyers. Evidence of illegal obstruction persists. We're in dark territory, worse than Watergate. Democracy teeters on the brink of constitutional crisis. This one's called Punishment is Love, and it begins with a quote from Tom Lehrer's song, The Masochism Tango, and the quote is, I ache for the touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango. America, each day you seduce, promise happy ever after, deliver sadistic cruelty, debase human decency, pillage the poor, give to the rich, humiliate, torture, tell the gullible powerless, this is tough love. A self-flagellating electorate clings to its fictions, gladly relinquishes control, surrenders liberty, will, passively offers itself to corrupt dominants who overpower, abuse. The broken beg for brutal punishment, unending pain. Nothing is their fault. They ecstatically bleed. And I'll read just a couple more here. What you do? Dissemble, distract, stir up fake controversies with conspiracist friends, deflect, deny criminal activity, pretend all is well. Give thanks the recent assault weapons slaughter temporarily diverts public attention. When the media focuses on your latest sexual scandal, claim you're a victim. Tweet misinformation, attack, accuse, use morally stunted mouthpieces to perform your treasonous bidding. Bluster and fume. Tell the world, pay no attention to the man behind the green curtain. Idiot Nation. Sunday morning begins with frightening headlines and insane president's tweets. Research analyzes America's rampant idiocy, documents the cause, educational defunding. Surrounded by cretinous crazy, it's tough to persevere, maintain hope, much less a positive outlook. Around us, institutions crumble, replaced by lowest denominator infotainment, crass propaganda. In this brave new world, resentful mobs take out their frustrations on the wrong targets. Trolls have seized control of checks and balances, construct a totalitarian gulag, seal every exit.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
So I wanted to ask, you know, obviously the main occasion for writing this book is, you know, the election, the running of Trump in the primaries, and then how he seemed to be a laughingstock at first, and then his campaign got more and more momentum, and then, you know, as we know, he became president. So there's definitely that inbuilt occasion. But was there, what about the situation made you want to directly respond to it?
Oh, on so many fronts. I mean, it's hard to pick just one. I was really struck by the parallel between what was happening here and what happened in Nazi Germany, and also in Italy with the brown shirts, mm-hmm. on the rise of fascism, and the violence, the demonizing, all of that. And it was as if we had lifted a rock and all the vermin were squirming out. It was like just a bunch of old white men used to being in power and having privilege were so threatened by having a black president and a female presidential contender that they just, you know, exploded. And I think what we're seeing is just a massive reaction to that. What frightens me is, at least during Watergate, there were still Republicans that had some degree of moral compass. And I don't see that here. I don't see the intelligence. I think that the literacy rate in the United States has gone down so far, and the lack of critical thinking skills, I think that's aided and abetted it. But also the fact that you have an entire political party now that puts greed and power above everything else. It's like there's no moral backbone. I think they have one so far who's stood up and said, yeah, he should be impeached. The rest of them make noises, but vote right along and support the agenda.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's something that I don't recall ever experiencing. I'm 37 years old, and I don't recall ever living in an America where polarization wasn't the rule. It seems like we've always kind of been, you know, each side runs along the party line totally and completely. And, you know, it's kind of saddening to me to hear that at one point we had an America that, you know, maybe certainly America has never been a perfect place, but at least we had an America that could see when something really was wrong. So it's kind of frustrating.
Well, don't forget, I came of age. I'm going to be 70. So I lived through the riots in the streets over the Vietnam War. I lived through all of that. I remember being absolutely appalled when the National Guard murdered students at Kent State. I mean, to me, that was the real awakening when, oh, my God, my own government will murder us if we don't toe the party line. So we came so close, I felt, at that time to out-and-out revolution. And I think we're approaching another cusp where that could very easily happen again. I don't know. How comfortable people are, whether they're willing to get out and get out in the streets again.
Yeah, this is definitely if there's going to be some kind of strong revolutionary protest or movement in the United States, I feel like we're kind of in a span where it's going to happen if it does happen. I remember
going to the Women's March here in Cincinnati right after Trump was inaugurated. And there was a real spirit of anger, and I felt like it was going to go somewhere, and I'm still hoping that it does. You know, it's hard to know.
Yeah. Well, where I live, it's an interesting dichotomy. I live on the Monterey Peninsula in California, and we have a very mm-hmm. strong military presence here. The Naval Postgraduate School is located here. Monterey Institute of International Studies, we're big CIA presence. And at the same time, you have this radical liberals where you have a lot of people who were involved like in SDS and involved with the United Farm Workers movement in the same area. So it's a real interesting dichotomy you see here in my community, and quite a bit of political activism, much of it coming out of the anti-war effort and with a lot of organizing tactics that they learned from Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers Union. So
That's interesting.
It's very, very interesting. For example, earlier this week, we had a massive turnout at Window on the Bay, which is our big gathering spot here in Monterey, protesting the abortion bans. Mm-hmm. Very large turnout for that.
Mm.
We've had three women's marches now down here. Very active. So I don't know. Interesting. A lot of money. It's crazy where we can have that. And yet, like 3 weeks ago, Mike Pence came quietly jetting into our airport to go extract money from all the rich Republicans who live over in Pebble Beach behind their gates. So,
right.
Very interesting.
So to kind of switch topics back to your book for a second. One thing I wanted to talk about, you know, any aesthetic concerns that you have in the book, you know, I'm not saying that you have to specifically address this, but one thing that I found interesting, well, two things that I found interesting when I was looking through submissions last year, I really liked that your book was unified. You know, it was unified on this common subject of you know, Trump's politics and whatnot. But also, I was very intrigued by this persona, Camille, that kind of shows up in several poems. And if you wanted to speak to that, you know, talk about what role she plays in the book, or you know, if you'd rather discuss something else of aesthetic importance, that'd be fine too.
I actually have three Camille chapbooks. Camille is pretty much my alter ego. She's a good Italian Catholic girl who's gone bad. Very free-spirited. The first one, Camille Verite, she's out there doing her Camille thing, very irreverent, very sexually unfettered. In the second book, Camille Abroad, she's rebounding from a bad love affair and kind of traveling. And both geographically and philosophically, I have one poem that's really funny. It's Camille at the Medicare workshop where she's learning about how to sign up for Medicare, and she gets so disgusted with the whole thing. She cuts out and she's out smoking a joint out in the parking lot because she just can't bear it.
Then
my latest one that came out is kind of Camille mobilizes. And of the Camille poems you have could have been a part of that book, but weren't. I have other political poems where she's talking about what's happening with women, what happens with older mm-hmm. women, and deals with a lot of social and political issues. But sometimes it's easier for me to adopt another persona. It frees me up to be able to write more honestly, I believe. And that's my go-to gal.
Yeah, I've that's kind of what I thought. I kind of thought, you know, this is probably an alter ego or something like that. And but that makes a lot of sense to me, the idea of fictionalizing oneself to kind of be, you know, be a little freer to write. So, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me. Were there any other, you know, it seems like the poems are, you know, there's definitely some interesting sounds and whatnot, but it's all free verse. Was there anything I'm missing on as far as form is concerned?
No, I pretty much write all free verse. For many of these, I'd read a headline or I'd see a quote and I would just become incandescent with rage. And sure. The best way to cope with that, I find, is writing. And that's right. Where the kernel for many of these poems came from, is just one more outrageous incident. I haven't stopped writing the poems. I mean, I could have a volume 2 and 3 of this at any time. Right. I've written plenty more since then.
Sure.
As this shit show just continues on.
That's something interesting. So you've written more, you know, as the shit show continues on. So there are, let me open a copy that I've got in front of me just to see. So it looks like we've got how many poems in here? Something like around 50-ish or so. So, you know, if you've written a lot more, what was your selection criteria for the book?
Oh, for the book, I wanted to try and keep it on the topic of the election and the issues surrounding that election and then what happened mm-hmm. after he was elected. I had plenty of others that had political spinoffs of things that happened during the campaign and during the primaries, but I really wanted to hone it down and just make like a laser focus on this.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. And one other thing stands out to me. I remember initially reading the manuscript, and there were a lot of, there still are a fair number of, epigraphs so what did you think about, you know, I definitely think that the epigraphs serve a purpose. There was one from Lady Gaga which I found, I want your ugly, I want your disease, I want your everything as long as it's free. That's, you know, that's just classically hilarious. So what were you thinking, what do you think those add to the book?
Well, for me, it just kind of gave me a wry twist of humor.
Right.
Yeah, I'm trying to put this stuff in some kind of perspective because it's so insane, absolutely right. Insane. And as a writer, it helps me from going too far afield. It kind of injects a little bit of humor in it, and it gives it sort of a cockeyed perspective, too. I think it adds interest.
Right. I absolutely noticed that, too, this wry sense of humor, which I really liked about the book. I love the artwork that you and I chose for the book. But if there's one thing it doesn't quite capture is your wry sense of humor. How you know, the book's pretty hilarious, actually.
Yeah, I'd forgotten how funny it was until one of my friends went back and read it recently. We were out having lunch. She says, "Shit, I'd forgotten how funny these poems are." Because I get together. I have a couple of women friends. We get together once a month. We go out and have lunch and we share what we've been writing with one another. And so my friends have heard these poems over the last couple of years, but they hadn't seen them all collected in a book. And when they went back and saw it again, it's like, damn, those are funny. You gotta laugh or you're gonna go insane or cry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
if you aren't able to humorize some of this stuff, it would really be too much to handle.
Yeah, I agree. Even now, it's often too much to handle.
Yeah, it really is. It really, really is.
I generally have to either write or walk to get rid of my fury. And it may be instructive as we get further into this presidency. I've gone from walking 3 miles a day to 6. So,
yeah, I definitely hear you. I need some good strenuous exercise to relieve my anger as well. So I know what you're saying. Definitely. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about before, you know, we let you go? You know, something that we've missed, anything at all?
I'm just thrilled that my book was selected by you and published. I love the presentation on it. The reception I've been getting from people who've read it has been really great. And I really welcome this opportunity to log it a little bit more, get it out there. So,
right.
I think you're performing a great service.
Well, thank you. I just want to share literature is basically what I want to do. And I really loved your book. I really thought it was fantastic. And I knew that as soon as I saw it, I was like, yep, this is the book. This is the book. It's funny, you know, how quickly when I'm scanning through submissions, it's pretty, I can tell pretty quickly if I'm interested. And I don't remember reading yours. I'm like, yep, this is almost certainly the one that I want. Almost certainly. So excellent. Well, Jennifer, thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. And, you know, I encourage listeners to go to our website, give me your snail mail address so that I can send you Jennifer's book. And on the back of the book, it, you know, it also tells you where you can find Jennifer's other books. So we talked about Camille Abroad and Camille Mobilizes. There's also some others listed on the back of Trumped Up Election if you were interested in going to those other presses and finding her other work as well. So anyway, Jennifer, I really appreciate you talking to me, and we will chat again over email or something like that, I'm sure.
That's great. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.